We come to a group of folks, or we've just seen a group of folks in chapter 18 of Revelation, where it was not well with their soul. They were standing at a distance, crying out, as we saw in verses 19, how they were crying out, which was in the imperfect tense. In other words, they're continuously, over and over and over again, crying out, just like the merchants in verse 15, standing at a distance, mourning and weeping and crying over the destruction of Babylon. And this was just the world's reaction to Babylon's fall. You had the kings. Everybody's mourning and weeping was based on how it affected their own personal circumstances. It's just for self-serving reasons. The kings, they wept because the strong city, verse 10, woe, the great city Babylon, the strong city. In other words, her political power, something the kings were depending upon or used for their own political advantage, was gone. The merchants, in verse 17, cried out that her great wealth has been laid waste. And then you had the people of the sea, those that made their living from the sea, whether it was sea captains or those who traveled in the ships or who traveled by sea just doing commerce, that they're moaning because all who had ships at sea became rich by her wealth. And now it's all gone. Now, I just heard an interesting statistic this week. I think it was on a commercial for the Navy, actually. But they were saying that 90% of all commerce today travels by water, goes by water. 90% of all commerce travels by water. A huge amount. And so when we're looking at these texts in Revelation, and we understand that they're relating to the future from the time that John was writing them, and we see the impact that these judgments are having on the commerce of the world, because we saw that under the bowl judgments, you know, so many of the ships were destroyed, the seas were turned to blood, and the merchants are weeping. Well, we can understand that 90% now of commerce goes by sea. How devastating that would be to the economic situation of the entire world. And of course, these merchants just stood at a distance. Self-preservation was their only thought at this time, other than moaning over the fact that they'd lost all their wealth. But when we come to verse 20, we're going to finish up chapter 18 tonight. When we come to verse 20, we see a totally opposite reaction. In verse 20, rejoice over her, O heavens, and you saints and apostles and prophets, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. And a strong angel took up a stone like a great millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, thus will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence and will not be found any longer. And the sound of harpists and musicians and flute players and trumpeters will not be heard in you any longer, and no craftsman of any craft will be found in you any longer, and the sound of a mill will not be heard in you any longer, and the light of a lamp will not shine in you any longer, and the voice of the bridegroom and bride will not be heard in you any longer. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, because all the nations were deceived by your sorcery, and in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all who have been slain on the earth. So the reaction of heaven, as we see in verse 20, is just totally opposite from the entire world system. Here there's a command, rejoice. And again, it's in the present tense, something to do over and over. Continually keep on rejoicing. Rejoice, and it's an imperative, so that it means it's a command. It's forceful. Rejoice over her, over Babylon. Now, there's a strong allusion here to Jeremiah 51 through much of the entire chapter. But in Jeremiah 51 relates the destruction of Babylon as it was the enemy of the nation of Israel during the days of Jeremiah. But there's not a double meaning here, but it's that part of the prophecy would have referred to Babylon of Jeremiah's day, and its destruction, but there's also elements of the prophecy that are going to relate to a future Babylon, as we'll see. But there's a lot of strong allusions here. In Jeremiah 51, verse 6 through 9 especially, we see Jeremiah says, "Flee from the midst of Babylon." Wasn't that what they were told over in Revelation 18, 4? You know, get out of here. Get out, my people. Flee from her. Flee from the midst of Babylon, each of you to save his life. Do not be destroyed in her punishment, for this is the Lord's time of vengeance. He is going to render recompense to her. Babylon has been a golden cup in the hand of the Lord, intoxicating all the earth. The nations have drunk of her wine. Therefore, the nations are going mad. Suddenly, Babylon has fallen and been broken. Wail over her. Bring balm for her pain. Perhaps she may be healed. Well, what are the merchants doing? They're wailing over her. In verse 9, "We applied healing to Babylon, but she was not healed. Forsake her and let us each go to his own country." What are the merchants doing? They're forsaking her. They're standing at a distance. "For judgment has reached to heaven and towers up to the very skies." The same terminology we saw used in verse 5 of chapter 18. How her judgment has reached to heaven. And we related that to the Tower of Babylon. That was the whole purpose of Babel. Was to build a tower that would reach to heaven. To make a name for themselves. So we see some strong allusions here. And then again, and we won't read it all, but in verses 45 through 56, there are again some strong allusions here in John's writing to this prophecy in Jeremiah. Now I think when we're dealing, and we've talked about this before, that when John is writing about Babylon here in Revelation, he's referring to a literal city, a literal Babylon, Babylon on the Euphrates. And again, Jeremiah tends to support that, Jeremiah 51:63. "It will come about as soon as you finish reading this scroll," that is all these judgments that he's just written through chapter 51, "you will tie a stone to it and throw it into the middle of the Euphrates," Babylon on the Euphrates, "and say, just so shall Babylon sink down and not rise again." And we're going to, isn't that what we're going to see in verse 21 is happening to Babylon, verse 21 of chapter 18. Yeah, Babel was the original Babylon. That was the city that was founded by Nimrod on the Euphrates. Yeah, in the plains of Shinar, which is on along the Euphrates River. Mm-hmm. That's right. So we see here this angel, and it's the same angel that was introduced back over in verse 4 of chapter 18. Well, who's to rejoice? Who is he talking to? "Rejoice over her, O heaven." Just generic term for everybody in heaven. Angels. And then he starts talking about specific groups in heaven. "O heaven, and you saints." That is all those who have been faithful to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Faithful to proclaim it. Faithful to live it. Faithful to be obedient to it. Who haven't buckled under the persecution. "And apostles." I think the apostles here is being used in the technical sense for the 12 apostles and probably also Paul. That these, and there probably were more than the 12 original apostles, because there are other men within the New Testament that are referred to as apostles. The only qualification for an apostle, or the qualifications were, was that you were appointed to the office by Jesus himself and that you had seen the resurrected Jesus Christ. And so but these are apostles who have been martyred, killed, or already died. Remember, John is looking to the future here. And then prophets, probably talking about New Testament prophets here, not Old Testament prophets. The New Testament had prophets as well. Remember, in Acts chapter 21, you had Agabus, who was a prophet, who prophesied that Paul would be bound and taken in captivity by the Romans and the Jews and eventually be killed. So it's referring to New Testament prophets. These are the ones who are supposed to be rejoicing. And it's possible that the rejoicing that we see in chapter 19, verses 1 through 5 and we won't get to it this week, but just to point it out that the rejoicing that's there in heaven is a response to this call by the angel to rejoice over the destruction of Babylon, because that's exactly what the content of their rejoicing is. And then the angel gives the reason for the rejoicing, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. Now there's two meanings really here that the word judge could imply or could hold. One is that it could be referring to a case for trial, in which case the meaning of the passage would be that God has decided or judged in your favor against them. Because literally the passage reads, God has judged your judgment on her. That's literally the way it reads in the Greek. So the judgment, He has judged your judgment on her. The judgment, could it mean He's decided, judged in your favor? Or it could mean in terms of a verdict or the sentence. And in that case, it would mean God gave the same sentence that was passed by them on you. Probably the first meaning is the one that's best here, and we can see that just even in the English translation. God has pronounced judgment for you against her. In other words, God has decided in your favor. God has decided to judge her. The sentence that you thought was right is what's being imposed on her. So it's just the principle of reciprocation here. And again, back to Jeremiah 51, we see this same principle. Jeremiah 51, verse 56. For the destroyer is coming against her, against Babylon, and her mighty men will be captured, their bows are shattered. For the Lord is a God of recompense. He will fully repay. Now in verse 21, a different angel enters the scene. We're told it's a strong angel. And this is the third angel that appears in this chapter, chapter 18, and is speaking with John. This one is a strong angel. We saw a strong angel in chapter 5, verse 2 that had the scroll that the Lamb took from this strong angel and opened it. And we also see a strong angel in chapter 10, verse 1, that had a little scroll that John was to take and to eat. In other words, it was further judgment, further proclamation of judgment. Well, here we have a strong angel. It could be one of these strong angels that was mentioned either in chapter 5 or chapter 10. But he has to be strong to do what he's going to be doing here. What does he do? He picks up a large stone. Picks up a stone like a great millstone. It wasn't a great millstone. It was like a great millstone. In other words, it was similar in size to a large millstone. Now, a large millstone, there's different types of millstones. And the particular word that's used here for this millstone, and often it's translated the stone of a donkey, because you had the millstones that were smaller that a woman would turn to grind wheat or whatever in the home. But then there were the large millstones that a donkey would turn. And these were 4 to 5 feet in diameter, up to a foot thick, and could weigh thousands of pounds. And you would have two of these. You'd have what they called the nether stone, which was the one on the bottom. Then you had the upper stone, which is the one that would move. The bottom stone was stationary, and the top one would move on top of it. And it was turned by a donkey. And this is the stone that John says, the stone that the angel is casting into the sea resembles. He threw it into the sea. Again, just depicting in a symbolic way, just like we read in Jeremiah 51, taking the judgment, putting a stone on it, throwing it into the Euphrates, this is how Babylon's going to sink down. In other words, the judgment is going to be swift and it's going to be total. He threw it into the sea. It's completely gone. There's no ruins to explore archaeologically or anything. It's gone. is completely gone. Now the angel explains this symbolic act. He says, thus, or in this way, will Babylon, the great city. Notice he changes to the future tense. In this way will it happen. So he's going back to the future. Referring to the future tense here. It's prophetic. In this way will Babylon, the great city, be thrown down with violence. This is an interesting word. It literally means to rush. To rush on, like a great army rushing on an enemy. And other words in this word family are used. It's used in Matthew 8, verse 32, for when Jesus casts the demons out of the man called Legion and casts the demons into the swine. And what do the swine do? They rush down the bank and into the water. They're just overcome with this violent, irrational rushing. And that's what they're leads to their destruction. We see the same word in Acts chapter 7 when after Stephen gives his sermon and the Pharisees, the Jewish council, they put their hands over their ears, are gnashing their teeth, and they rush upon him in just this violent, irrational rage and anger. And that's really what this word implies, that it's cast down with violence. It's sudden, irrational, rage-filled violence. And it will not be found any longer. See, how is Babylon destroyed? Remember? It's the beast and the 10 kings that have aligned themselves with the beast who come against Babylon and destroy her. Why? I mean, they've been in this mutually dependent relationship since the beginning of creation, virtually, where the system of the beast is in mutual dependence with the system of the harlot, and this whole Babylonian system. But here at the end, why is it destroying? Because it's in competition with the beast for worship and ultimate control. And so even there's this mutual dependence, there's this irrational rush of violence and sudden destruction on her. And she's not going to be found any longer. In other words, it's a complete annihilation. It's not a gradual decay over hundreds of years where there's ruins left. This is a complete annihilation. So this is a totally different destruction that's being talked about or prophesied by Jeremiah, or a different aspect of it than what is prophesied by Jeremiah. Now, in verses 9 through 19, John got a picture, or was shown the destruction of Babylon from the viewpoint of outsiders. Those who are standing outside Babylon, the merchants, the kings, they're looking at Babylon from a distance. They're seeing the smoke rising up, the destruction. And they're looking, remember, they're standing at a distance, mourning. But in verses 22 and 23, John gets shown a picture of the destruction of Babylon from the inside. From what it's like inside the city. What's happening there. The sound of harpists and musicians and flute players and trumpeters will not be heard in you any longer. Now notice this repetition of that phrase through here. It's used 6 times. Not any longer. Any longer. No longer. The word not here is in the Greek is oume. It's the strongest negation in the Greek. In no way, without qualification, never ever, is this ever going to happen. Now Paul uses the same term in Romans 6:1. So we continue to sin that grace may increase? May it never be. No. Perish the thought. So here it's not. The strongest negation, not any longer. Won't be found there any longer. In other words, it's a complete and a permanent cessation. Complete and permanent. Now, the first thing we see John says it's not going to be there are things pertaining to the arts, culture, refinement. It's typically only available to the wealthy. You have the harpists, musicians. A harpist was somebody who played the harp and the timpani. And the way this word reads it, it's somebody who plays the harp and accompanies the harp with singing. They're musicians, and this is just a term for anybody in general skilled in all instruments, even skilled in the arts. Flute players. This was a wooden flute. The only other time this word is used in the New Testament is when Jesus goes to heal Jairus' daughter and he comes in and she's already dead and the flute players are there. In other words, they were used in funeral processions and for dirges, but they were also used for entertainment as well, especially during pagan festivals. And trumpeters. Now the trumpet was an instrument that was not usually a musical instrument or used for the purposes of a musical instrument in New Testament times. It was mainly used to call people to soldiers to battle. It was used as a signal to warn of danger or in athletic competitions. But it wasn't typically used because you only could get a couple of notes out of the trumpet that was used in New Testament times. But it was also used in pagan feasts and ceremonies. They would just blow them, make a lot of noise and a lot of racket with them, kind of like they do at Mardi Gras with all these big plastic horns, or at soccer competitions that they blow these annoying horns all the time. So this is what they were. But it's indicating things that are associated with the arts, with culture, with festivals, and revelry, things that were typically only available to the wealthy. Then no craftsman of any craft will be found in you. This word craftsman is used in Hebrews 10:11 when it's talking about Abraham was looking for a city whose architect, whose craftsman was God. And so it's referring to a skilled labor. All skilled labor here, all skilled professions are not going to be there anymore. In other words, you have economic and social ruin. Total. Total. And then there's no sound of a mill in you any longer. Well, this was a common sound in most New Testament villages. The sound of commerce, the sound of industry, it's not going to be there. In other words, not only is all the skilled professions not going to be there, even the unskilled is going to be gone. Everything is going to be gone. Skilled may not be there because possibly they had the means to leave and to flee, but the others are going to be destroyed. Never again is there going to be found any kind of business, trade, skilled or unskilled, here. And then the light of the lamp will not shine in you any longer. In other words, no ability to illuminate the city, just a total blackout. Kind of like Europe during World War II, just total blackout. But even then, there was the ability to light your house. You had to use blackout curtains. But here there's no light of any type will shine in you any longer. The voice of the bridegroom and bride, no longer. In other words, all the routine of daily life is going to come to an abrupt and violent and permanent end. Just like the days of Noah. Just like Lot. Matter of fact, that's what Jesus talks about in Luke chapter 17, and speaking of what it would be like right before His coming. Verse 26, "And just as it happened in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They were eating, they were drinking, they were marrying, they had been given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. It was the same as happened in the days of Lot. They were eating, they were drinking, they were buying, they were selling." You see, all this commerce was going on. "But on the day that the Lord went out from Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. It will be just the same on the day that the Son of Man is revealed. So we're seeing this fast, quick, violent, total, permanent destruction. Now we're told two reasons for this destruction. First one is for your merchants were the great men of the earth. Now what is this term great men of the earth? The merchants were the great men of the earth. The word literally means chief men or nobles. See this in when Herod in the New Testament, when Herod has John the Baptist beheaded, Herod has thrown a birthday party for himself and he has invited all the lords of his kingdom. The same word, the chief men, the great men. In other words, these were the political rulers of the kingdom. But what's happened here in Babylon, not necessarily in Babylon, because these men are not Babylonians, but they have been deriving and getting their wealth off of Babylon. See, these are business magnates who are now the chief men. They're the ones who are calling the shots politically, economically, and they're doing it for their own personal advantage. Again, they're not in the city, but they've profited from the city, and they manipulate and they corrupt government for their own personal ends. And we see this today. You know, people today complain about big business running and controlling government, and it's true to a certain extent. But here it's just going to be even more so and even more pernicious and even harder on those who aren't in the loop, who aren't benefiting from this. They do it for their own personal gain at the expense of others. So your business magnates are the great men of the earth. They're the ones who are calling the shots. And then the second reason, because all the nations were deceived by your sorcery. See, this is why the merchants were enriched by Babylon. This is why they profited from her. It was because of her seduction of all the nations. They were able to profit by Babylon because of how she seduced all the other nations. By your sorcery. All the nations were deceived by your sorcery. In other words, they're seduced into this self-worship. Because that's the Babylonian system. Let us make a name for ourselves. They're seduced into self-worship through self-gratification, extravagant, luxurious lifestyles, even living beyond their means, if that's what it took, in order to obtain what they wanted, to gratify their own sinful desires, selfish desires, and in the process they're enriching the merchants of the earth. All for the gratification of the flesh, all for the love of the world. They've been seduced into this system of self-worship, and as such, it's enriched these men. Well, there's a third reason given to us in verse 24. Third reason for her destruction. In her was found the blood of prophets and of saints, and of all who have been slain on the earth. In other words, this system, this Babylonian system, that's now come to its fruition, its fullness here, it's responsible for the murder of the prophets and the saints and all who have been killed on the earth, slain on the earth. And in the context, it's talking about those who have been slain for the cause of Jesus Christ and for the word of Jesus Christ. See, not all of them are killed in Babylon. But even if they're killed in other parts of the world, they're simply following Babylon's lead. He's the one who's setting the example for all the other persecutions. So ultimately, she's responsible for it all. So what John is just showing here is there's going to be this future global hostility to Christianity that's culminating here in the dominion of the beast the alignment of the six, these ten kings with the beast and with the harlot that has had her system all throughout. And you remember the beast has seven heads that manifested itself in seven world empires. And there's this, been this synergistic cooperation between this Babylonian religious system of self-worship, idolatry, with the system of the beast. And now it's come to its full expression in this future global hostility to Christianity. It'd be interesting to know how many people today who make up the professing church, how they would respond, which group they would be in. Would they be the ones moaning and weeping and crying over the destruction of Babylon? All the wealth, all the goods, all the material stuff. How would they view this? Or would they be with the saints rejoicing over her? Because they understand behind all the wealth, all the pomp, all the luxury, everything, is this evil, wicked self-worship that plunged man into rebellion against God in the first place. Well, yeah.